Big start to the week for equities and the grain markets. Had a mixed start. Livestock futures were sharply mixed as the markets attempt to digest some news from processors. But it is National Agronomy Week, and there are some signs out there that this year could get off to a timely start in the middle of the Corn Belt.
Live from a socially acceptable distance via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we chat with Clayton Pope from Clayton Pope Commodities. In the final segment, it's a bird, it's a plane. No, it's Kerry Artac with his weekly Artac attack. And right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Like I said, it is National Agronomy Week. And DeKalb Asgrow, Delta Pine are making sure that we bring some very timely information to all the AgriTalk listeners this week with some industry spotlights with some really interesting people out there from across the country. So looking forward to all of those. As you mentioned,
it's just about high time there was some agronomification going on outside. That's agronomification, right? We're going to agronize out there?
I think we are. You know, there's been some anhydrous put down in your part of the world over there.
The white buffalo are on the loose, amigo. I saw the first one of the season in my neighborhood just yesterday afternoon. Yeah.
So it is starting to happen out there. And I know I've talked with a couple of guys from to the east of us that are looking at putting some soybeans in the ground yet this week. So should be interesting. It's that time. It's that time to get things rolling.
A source has been texting me this morning from our area here, talked about there's plenty of, it seems to be at least, plenty of fertilizer around, plenty of anhydrous or whatever, but the gear to go ahead and get that put down is a little bit in short supply. So we've got kind of a supply squeeze, not on the fertilizer itself, but on the stuff you need to put it down.
Yeah, you got to have it all.
Yeah, you really do. You really do.
If you've got one without the other, you're just stuck looking.
You ain't got much without the other. Yeah,
that's right.
But the word is they're steadily working through it. So at least here in our area, you know, let's be patient. Let's not forget this is a weird time for all of us. So
that's right. And we will be relying on some experience today. Clayton Pope Commodities is going to be joining us. And we'll find out how he is dealing with all of the uncertainty that we're facing right now. Okay, for sure. Let's go ahead. Jump into it.
Well, Chip, export inspections of wheat in the weekend of April 2 totaled just over 320,000 metric tons. That was at the low end of trade expectations. Concerns over the U.S. winter wheat crop has also limited selling interest in wheat futures. Traders are looking forward to the first crop progress and condition report for the spring for winter wheat this afternoon. July hardbud winter wheat was 3.25 cents higher, 481.75. July soft red jumped 6 cents to 551. July spring wheat gained 2.5 cents to 538 even. Chip.
Yeah, and we continue to hear some talk about the restricted exports out of the Black Sea region. I think that is providing a little bit of support for this market, for the wheat market too.
All right. Well, corn export inspections topped hefty trade expectations and came in. Excuse me. Let me try that again. Corn export inspections topped hefty trade expectations and came in at more than 1.271 million metric tons. But corn price action is basically being driven by day-to-day action in the energy markets right now. And today's pressure on nearby crude oil weighed on corn futures. It's estimated 3.5 billion gallons of annual ethanol production is in shutdown right now. Those plants would normally consume about 25 million bushels of corn per week. Jeez. May corn futures were 3 cents lower, 327.75. July corn fell 3.25 to 333.5. December corn closed at 348.25, down 2.5 cents. Man, is it all tied up in ethanol right now, buddy?
A lot of it is. And we just can't afford to give up 25 million bushels of corn use in a week right now. We just can't afford that.
Right. Put it that way, it's a staggering amount of corn demand.
Yeah.
Weekly export inspections of soybean April 2 of just over 298,000 metric tons were at the low end of trade expectations. Beans were helped early in the production by the rank. And selling is being limited now by ongoing expectations that China will step up its purchases of U.S. beans this spring to restock soybean and soybean meal supplies. May bean futures were a penny and a quarter higher, 855 and a half. July beans firmed 1¾ cents, 861 and a quarter. November bean futures closed at 865 and a quarter, up 3¼ cents. And really, do I have to keep saying, and maybe that might bring some support to soybeans? Is that,
I don't know. You're starting to cut out on me here. You're starting to cut out on me here, so you can ask it again if you want. But we are. But yeah, I think I got it figured out. Yes, we are continuing to wait on demand from China before this bean market can go up.
Well, cattle trade, can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Is this thing on?
Yes.
Cattle trade, widely mixed. Short-term demand concerns weighed on front-month cattle futures, posted solid gains on support from gains in the stock market. April live cattle, $4.50 lower, 83, 82 and a half. August cattle firmed 52 and a half to 84, 82 and a half. And April feeders, 217 and a half higher at 110, 42 and a half. And finally, on the snout side, April lean hog futures posted a $5.25 trading range today as the market attempted to digest news about a tightening supply of shackle space in the industry. April lean hogs 90 cents higher, 41.12 and a half in July, gained 205, 54.77 and a half in your July. Chip.
Yeah, you know, the way that this hog market traded today, it's almost like once we got confirmation that the Tyson plant in Columbus Junction, Ohio, went down. It's almost like it was, okay, we got that factored in. We had it factored in last week. So now that it's happened, let's see how the market reacts. And there, it, in a weird kind of way, it was a little bit of relief buying that happened in the hog market today.
All right.
So, strange stuff. Strange stuff. All right, let's bring in Jack Scoville. Jack is with Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Doing great. How about you?
Doing okay. Doing all right. So, what's your take? Mixed start to the week for the grains.
Well, it's better than it's been. You know, we've been pretty much lower lately. The wheat market continues to be pretty impressive. And I think for domestic and Black Sea considerations, as you mentioned, it's been dry in the Black Sea. It's been cold here. The demand is real good here. Demand shifting perhaps from the Black Sea over here a little bit as well. So, wheat's got a story, or a couple of stories, and the beans, I think, just kind of in a holding pattern, and poor corn just once again. But the ethanol demand, the way it is, it's just ruined the corn market.
Yeah, corn's got a story too, but there's nothing good about it right now. That's the problem, and it's not just on the ethanol side; it's on the feed side too. If we start to back some of these animals up and they go on a maintenance ration.
Well, that's true, too, but I don't think that's happening just yet, but it could very easily happen if the plants, if some of the plants start shutting down. But, the corn just really has nothing good going for it right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, buddy. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. That is Jack Scoville with the Price Futures Group there in Chicago. Okay, all of this uncertainty that we are facing on a regular basis coming from these markets. We've got uncertainty on the domestic use side, uncertainty on the export front. It's tough to figure out exactly what it all means for how you should be managing the risk out there. We're going to talk about all that with Clayton Pope, Clayton Pope Commodities, next, right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields. AgriTalk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgro, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. With that, let's go ahead and roll this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Austin Carlson. He is a DeKalb Asgro agronomist in Minnesota. Austin, thanks for making time for us this morning. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing my part for the social distancing, and I know you're out there doing your part to get this crop going. How's things looking up there right now? How things going as we start into the growing season?
Yeah, so things are going pretty good. I know this morning here in southeast Minnesota, we have cloudy weather, but it's already 50 degrees, and that's pretty odd for us here in southeast Minnesota. They already see 50 degrees here in early April, so... But right now, I mean, those soil profiles for us in the southeast part of the state, they're still pretty full. I mean, think about coming off of that wet year we had in 2019. I mean, honestly, our tile lines got a chance to run all winter long, so that was a good thing. We've had above average temperatures so far. We've had some sun, so we're pretty optimistic right now, but we know there's a lot of April left to come at us here in Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely there is. Okay, so agronomically, what do producers need to keep in mind to get their crops off to a good start?
Yeah, when I think about getting our crops off to a good start, I mean, number one, hopefully that drainage, we found out where those drainage areas need to be taken care of from 2019. But then secondly, would just be having that proper fertility levels, right, and the correct balance in our soils. When I think about those high yields, like what we got in southeast Minnesota in 2017, I mean, we had some high yields, so making sure, looking at those crop removal charts, making sure that we're replacing those nutrients and building those soils, I think that's a big key to make sure that we have the fertility levels there to support a big crop. And then, okay. I mean, lastly, we can't ignore the planter, right? Hopefully we've all been social distancing, getting in the shops during this time and working on those planters, because it is a critical tool that we have to make sure that crop out gets to a good start, so...
Absolutely. Hey, real quick, theme for Agronomy Week is chasing the dream. So as an agronomist, how are you chasing the dream?
Yeah, so me as an agronomist chasing the dream, it's just getting a chance to work with all the great people in agriculture, right? We're surrounded with a lot of great people and getting a chance to walk fields with people who we all share the same passion about, talking about soil, talking about crops, and talking about livestock, man. That's a unique opportunity that us in agriculture have, so...
Yeah, no doubt. Austin, thank you so much for helping us kick off our Agronomy Week coverage. We really appreciate it. Good luck to you.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. That is Austin Carlson, DeKalb Asgrove agronomist in Minnesota. All right. Thank you for that, Austin. Appreciate it. Let's get to the conversation now with Clayton Pope from Clayton Pope Commodities. Clayton, I hope all is well with you and your family.
Hello, Chip. Yeah, it sure is. We're all kind of hunkered down here and hoping and praying for the best outcome and a quick one, too.
Strangest thing you've seen for a while, isn't it?
Well, you've got that right. You know, it's funny, just about a month ago or so, we were talking to our kids and our grandkids about what like different defining events there were in various generations.
Yeah.
And this thing hadn't even come up yet, but I got to say, this one will take the cake for now.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I talked with Senator Grassley this morning, and he kind of mentioned something along that line, Clayton, that, you know, you've got World War II, you've got the Vietnam War, you've got Korea, you've got there is a list of things, but this is one of those generational type happenings, events that will stick with us all for a very long time. And unfortunately, Clayton, as we start thinking about what this looks like on the other side, when we start the real recovery from COVID-19, it's pretty hard to really figure out exactly what that's going to look like, isn't it?
Well, it really is. You know, it's hard to believe. Even in the best case scenario, they're not going to be able to just flip a switch and everybody go back to work with no fears or go to Lollapalooza and stand next to a couple thousand people next to you and not worry about it. It's going to be a while, I think. But and I read something today online saying something like if the government expects small businesses to just jump right back up to being fully operational after being literally shut down, they got another thing coming, just because it's not that easy to just, you know, turn the key and be open for business again for an awful lot of businesses. It's going to be a challenge.
Yep. Based on what you know right now, and you know, the to me, when I start thinking about what the curve of the economic recovery looks like, there's all kinds of different descriptions, but I'm thinking hockey stick with kind of a long, drawn-out base on it that does eventually turn higher, and once it does turn higher, by golly, this is going to be a long climb that's going to last for a long time, because when you get in such a deep hole, it's easy to climb for a long time. Or the U with a little bit shorter base to it, but a much stronger recovery. And then there's the V bottom, which I think everybody, you know, that's pretty simple or self-explanatory there. What are you thinking, Clayton? Hockey stick, U, or V?
I sure don't see a V. That seems a little too good to be true. I do think, though, that the market is, if we're talking about equities here, the stock market, you know, you get your biggest rallies in a bear market, just like you get your biggest short-term pullbacks in a bull market. You know, the market just likes to clear the deck of all the weak longs or weak shorts, as the case may be, and it's extremely good at doing that. So that being the case, I think, you know, we can expect all kinds of, like, interim big moves up, just like we're seeing today. Personally, I'm not a believer that the low is in on the stock market. I mean, I look back at 2008, and you know, the high for the Dow prior to that was in October 2007. It didn't bottom out till March of 2009. It took 17 months for the Dow to drop 55%. We've dropped 39%, if you look at the 18,000 low, in 1 month. So if I had to bet, I'd say we've got, you know, weaker equities ahead of us eventually, but that's not to say we can't rally a couple more thousand points. I mean, who knows? But I don't think that there's necessarily a, you know, a baked in reality correlation between bonds and between stocks and corn or beans.
Right.
I mean, they certainly are affected by the emotions and the whole risk-off attitude, and if that, you know, the more extreme that is on Wall Street, obviously the more impactful it probably would be on grains. But they march to a different drum, and they certainly can. And who knows? I mean, that's a whole different world out there. There's so many uncertainties that could certainly fall on the bullish side that would, you know, prompt our markets to work in the opposite direction. But this is clearly a negative at the moment.
And yeah, it's Clayton.
A dose of bullish news to reverse.
Clayton, what do you say to your clients that call you up and say, but Clayton, people got to eat. People are going to continue to use the products that we produce. That's not so much the case on the energy side, because we are driving less. We are not flying. We are not traveling.
Yeah.
But on the food side of things, does food commodities lead us back?
Well, that's a great question. I would think in the long run that is typically the case. It would lead us back. But on the other hand, you know, an awful lot of, like, particularly soybean, well, corn too. I mean, those are, well, those products are in demand mainly because of a rising standard of living in various parts of the world, particularly China's, you know, the focus point now because they're such a big potential customer. So, you know, if they were to take a real tumble here in their standard of living, then they clearly will have less of an appetite for corn and beans.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just looking at it from that angle.
Right.
But it's pretty miraculous the way China has seemed to come back here. You just don't know how valid any numbers that anybody throws up there regarding China are. But, you know, I'm still absolutely my jaw's on the floor over how quickly they apparently have come back from the ASF thing. You know, I mean, not only are they, their bean demand, you know, on a total basis didn't really take that much of a hit. And now the story last week was that they're actually importing breeding stock to really expand their hog herds. I mean, I don't know. It's amazing that they could have overcome it, but more power to them. I hope they have.
Yeah. When I started hearing the reports and you know, talking with exporters that are saying, boy, the China ports are basically empty of soybeans and the crushers are running low on meal. It's like, what? How did that happen so fast?
Yeah, pretty amazing for sure.
It is. There's no question about it, because we expected that recovery to happen. I just didn't expect it to happen as soon as what it did, that is for sure. But, you know, it still needs to turn into some of that consistent buying year-round or more year-round, less seasonal, for U.S. soybeans or meal, whatever it takes. Yeah.
Yeah.
This thing around.
They've been a stout buyer, but they need to turn their attention to us.
Exactly. We're talking with Clayton Pope, Clayton Pope Commodities. When we come back, let's get into the numbers that we got last week, those acreage numbers. Are they going to change? Plus, I want to talk about the dollar, its impact on exports. That's next with Clayton Pope on AgriTalk. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. The Wall Street Journal editorial board says the WHO's bows to Beijing have harmed the global response to the pandemic. OPEC Plus talks have been delayed until Thursday. Pelosi shifts priorities regarding Phase 4 aid measures. The flow of trucks to Argentine ports has improved. The bottlenecks are showing some signs of easing in Argentina. Brazilian soybean harvest pushes to 86% complete. Russian wheat exports running 1 million metric tons under year-ago levels. And Ukraine's wheat exports slow as the prices rise. That's Pro Farmer's headline news. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgrow, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. All right, good stuff. Welcome back. Let's go ahead and run that industry spotlight. Joining us now, Todd Kimbrough from Itasca, Texas. He is a farmer there, and he is also a DeKalb NCGA Yield Contest winner from 2019. Todd, how you doing, buddy? It's good to talk with you.
Pretty good, Chip. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Did you do anything this last season agronomically outside of that hybrid selection?
You know, we pay a lot of attention to planter detail and use our, you know, our DeKalb agronomist a lot.
Yep.
Steve Carlson, man, I can bounce the craziest idea you've ever heard of off of him. And, you know, I'll have an answer. And inevitably, he teaches me something every year, just full of info. And I honestly don't know how we do it without him, to be real honest with you. And I'm not just saying that.
Well, it sounds like you've turned him into a partner rather than just somebody that you bounce ideas off of.
Absolutely. If I'm up at 10:30 at night and the light bulb comes on for some of the craziest idea you could have imagined, I'll text it to him, and lo and behold, I'll get a text back with all kinds of info and agronomic data, and I don't know, Steve's something else.
See, that's cool. Great guy. That is cool when you've got that kind of a relationship, and when you're both pushing to get in the same spot, which is, you know, a yield winner in your state there. That's pretty cool stuff, man. All right, well, I'm going to come back down and see you sometime here in the not too distant future, Todd, and tell Clay to watch out because I'm coming to see him too.
Come join us anytime.
You know I will. All right, thank you so much, Todd.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, that is Todd Kimbrough, Itasca, Texas farmer and the DeKalb NCGA Yield Contest winner. All right. Thank you so much, Todd Kimbrough, there for that conversation. I really appreciate that. Okay, let's get back to the conversation with Clayton Pope, Clayton Pope Commodities. Clayton, the Tyson plant there at Columbus Junction, Iowa, you know, it goes down over the weekend, and we've got hog prices closing higher today. I would not have anticipated that. Just because the supply and the demand, not only for pork, but for processing capacity, is so finely balanced in this country that I just kind of expected, Clayton, that if we took a plant down because of workers being out sick, that the market would be sick that day too. But it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, I think that's the same with any market, though, Chip. I mean, you don't know, like, heading into the severe weakness last week and how much of the handwriting was on the wall for that to happen. You know, certainly a all-out disastrous scenario was being discounted in the hog market last week. We were limit down, what, 3 out of 5 days and two limit downs the week before or something like that. So, you know, so in a way, maybe that's sort of a sell the rumor, buy the fact
right.
kind of reaction.
Right, absolutely. I think there's probably something to that. Thank God.
Yeah,
you know, the reaction that we got today made it a little easier to take all the selling pressure that we had last week. What do you make, Clayton, about the numbers that we got last week from USDA on the prospective plantings report? 97 million acres of corn, 83.5 million beans.
Well, as we all know, you know, this was taken, you know, close to a month before the numbers were released, you know, 3-4 weeks. Yeah. And it is a different world now and on the 31st from when the results were compiled. But that being said, there seems to be, you know, pretty industry-wide disbelief of the numbers. Like, oh, just wait, you know, that corn number is no way that's real. And while I totally agree with the likelihood that that is the highest number we'll see for corn acres this year, history would tell us that it's unlikely to fall as much as a lot of people think it's going to. I mean, the biggest drop we've had in recent history, by recent I mean 20 or 30 years, I think it's about 4.5 million acres off that March 31st report to whatever the June acreage report shows. So, you know, maybe the drop will be more than 4.5 million, but I doubt it. I mean, you've got, you know, so many people have already got, you know, some field work done. They bought the seed or whatever, but for all kinds of various reasons, they, you know, they've kind of set sail on X number of corn acres and Y number of bean acres. And while I think there'll certainly be some switch, I don't think it's going to be, you know, as much as maybe the corn growers would like to see.
Right.
So right. I don't know. I guess I'd say 3-4 million acres, maybe something like that would probably be a reasonable guess at this point. But obviously, a lot depends on weather too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I wonder if the guys are starting to, because if I do the balance sheet for next year, Clayton, with 97 million planted, and you know, take 91.5% of that just to be on the conservative side, and throw a national average corn yield of 176 on it, staying conservative there too.
Mm-hmm.
What it does to the balance sheet does not make me happy at all, Clayton. I mean, it gets up over 3 billion bushels pretty easy.
Oh, I know. It definitely does. Yeah, I think it's going to be a challenge to keep it below 3 billion, to tell you the truth, Chip. I mean,
oh,
with this ethanol bomb that's been dropped on us here. And that's, you know, real trouble.
I mean, we're talking about, late 1980 since we've been in a situation like that, Clayton.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I mean, it's not likely to be as bad as stocks-to-usage ratio just because
right.
you know, the same raw number is different than, you know, percentage-wise. But nevertheless, yeah, it's a problem. And it's going to be tough. I think, you know, producers, to some extent, the horse is out of the barn here, you know, as far as protecting downside. But in the same sentence, I got to add, that doesn't mean there's not more downside potential in these markets, because there's tremendous additional downside risk, I think.
Yeah.
And that being the case, I mean, there's still, I mean, nobody wants to go out there and want to, let alone think they need to protect 340 D's corn. But on the other hand, it's probably the prudent thing to do to some extent, because I think it's,
well,
348 is the close today. But, you know, if that becomes a reality, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, there's no risk premium in these prices. And I'm the first to say there's not much, it doesn't seem like. But on the other hand, if we go from April 6th to November 6th, and there's not a crop problem, we will see all too clearly just how much risk premium is still in these prices here. So I think there's some option strategies that can be pursued that can still give a person very good downside protection. And sure, it puts a lid on the upside potential, but it's not something you can't get out of if things change dramatically. But
Are you talking about some option spreads in here, Clayton, that you like?
Yeah, some kind of min-max strategy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So talk with your brokers. Give Clayton a call. You know, do something.
Yeah, I think that's the thing to do. I definitely, it's a time for a risk manager, or for a producer, to really give the risk management some thought, and even to talk to their banker about it, because the banker is going to be all ears. about you know, price protection this year, probably more than there ever before in their career. So they're probably going to find a willing ally in that camp. And I'm not saying sit here and, you know, lock in 100% of your production, but, you know, steps should be made. And in this environment, they should probably be baby steps, but steps should be made. You can't just sit here and do nothing.
And I think what I'm hearing, well, you just said it. Don't just sit here and do nothing. Stay active in your marketing.
Mm-hmm. And that would go too. If I mean, if you are thinking about switching some corn to beans, and I definitely think there will be some of that going on, like we just talked about. I think you should consider making some similar steps to protect the bean price. Even though, again, that's nothing to brag about, but it's still, you know, it could get worse. And then number two, don't tell anybody that you're going to switch from corn to beans. For God's sake.
Keep that little piece of info to yourself.
That's right.
I love it. Love it. Hey, one other thing that you had on your notes that you wanted to talk about, and I want to talk about it, is the dollar. Boy, the way that we shot up through par and then it sat back, it's been kind of a rough and rocky ride for that dollar so far.
Boy, it's been wild, hasn't it? It's really hard to behold. You know, when you get right down to it, though, the dollar and every other currency on earth is a fiat currency. I mean, they're all just backed by confidence. And so it's the ultimate ugly dog contest, you know. None of these currencies are worth anything when you get right down to what they're backed by. But, you know, there's a lot of confidence in the U.S. the system and all that kind of thing. And so as such, it's holding up remarkably well, if you ask me, when you consider what, you know, the Fed has embarked on and the administration, just in terms of flooding the market with literally trillions of dollars of liquidity.
Yeah.
It's pretty mind-blowing that the dollar rallies in the face of that. But I don't know if people on your show have talked about this theory that there's just an almost incomprehensible amount of dollar debt out there in the world right now. And as these various debt instruments mature, it's creating the ultimate short squeeze on the dollar. So you've got all these people that do need to service this debt. They need dollars to pay off that debt. So despite the fact that from all appearances the government is debasing our currency, it's being supported by this need for dollars. And so it's kind of a bizarre game, but I think that's largely what's supporting the dollar right now. Unfortunately, just another negative for grain prices. Unless that release valve blows off somehow.
That is really interesting. Really interesting. Okay, I'm done taking my notes now. Now you've only got 20 seconds left. Last words to the listeners out there, Clayton.
Well, like we were saying, you know, don't freeze here. Talk to a risk manager. I don't think you want to throw in the towel and just, you know, hit the bid out there and sell a bunch of cash, you know, something that can't be reversed. I'm talking new crop now.
Yeah.
And if you're not familiar with option strategies, I think that's the best thing to consider right now. And I would not be a straight buyer of puts. To pay just time premium only buying puts, you're probably digging a deeper hole. You got to make a compromise instead of a roof on a ceiling.
Gotcha. Clayton, thank you so much, my friend. Thank you. That's Clayton Pope.
You can't see us, and we can't see you, so don't go changing. Listen just the way you are to AgriTalk.
Davis?
Yes, Chip.
I don't know if we want to encourage that in this day and age when people are stuck at home and they know they're not going anywhere.
Did you say stuck at home and then trailed off a little bit?
And they know that they're not going anywhere. I think that's what I was going to say.
Is that what you think you're going to say?
I feel like you've got me in a box. Stop it.
Easy, Barry. All right. Are you okay? Deep breath.
I'm okay.
Gary Hartack now joins us from Hartack Advisory.
That's right. How you doing, Gary?
Doing pretty good, guys. How are you?
Doing all right, man. Okay, get me out of this. Let's jump straight into corn, Gary.
All right, Maycorn, you know, a few weeks ago I'd mentioned how we had a long-term sell signal below 359 and a quarter. It's a channel bottom that goes back about 15 years. We officially settled below it for the month itself last week. And so, you know, that is now our ceiling of resistance that can actually contain buying into summer trade, possibly through the balance of the year. And below which, my prognosis for the lead contract for the broader corn market is bearish over that time horizon. There are a series of stair-step support levels on the way down to what is now considered a realistic, you know, one-year objective, well below current price levels at 222 even. The first support level is 327 and a quarter, and we actually tested it today. We came off a little bit, closed just above it. This 327 and a quarter level actually could contain weekly selling pressures, and above which, 359 and a quarter, that big ceiling, is in reach over the next few weeks. I don't have a buy signal per se. It's just that we're holding above 327 and a quarter. There's nowhere to go but to 359 and a quarter over the next few weeks. But closing the week below 327 and a quarter shouldn't come as a great surprise given the longer-term dynamic. I would then expect 296 even within 2 to 3 weeks. That level also able to contain weekly selling pressures when tested. And if we close below it, 273 even becomes the next 2 to 3 week target, so forth and so on. Now, upside, if we could close the week Thursday, this is an abbreviated week, right? Isn't it? I believe
yes,
it is.
Yep.
If we close Thursday above 359 and a quarter, and that's an obvious long shot at this point in time, that should shrug off that recent long-term sell signal, and I then expect 385 even within 2 to 3 weeks, 410 even attainable into early summer. But until then, longer-term hedges should be set below 359 and a quarter. Okay. On to May soybeans.
Hey, real quick, Kerry, based on the formation that you're looking at right now, that 222 level that's down there, the lowest target, what would you say the odds are, based on the formations that you're looking at, that we're going to go down and hit that?
I'd say about 60%. I mean, anything can happen between now and then. We got a full year of fundamentals to play out and so forth and so on. So weather and everything. But what the chart is saying is, you know, we just violated a long-term structure that had been holding beautifully for 4 years. And the next long-term structure is a trend line off the 86 low and the, I forget what the something 98 low maybe. And that's at 222 even. That's kind of what the chart is suggesting.
Gotcha.
Is it 90%? No, I'd say 60%.
Okay.
But I'd suggest being hedged longer term below 359 and a quarter. On to May soybeans, largely unchanged from last week, 885 even, can contain weekly buying pressures as it has the last couple of weeks, and below which the market is likely to retest 839 even long-term support over the next week or two. 839 even channel bottom on the weekly chart did absorb selling pressures a few weeks ago, and holding above 839 even, the broader soybean market can continue up into the 970s as we continue kind of into midsummer. So that said, a weekly settlement Friday, which doesn't look likely at this point, above that 885 even, should actually yield 975 even by the end of June, where the broader market encounters, you know, long-term resistance able to contain buying through the balance of the year. Now, downside, if we close the week Thursday below 839, and I'd need to see that by at least a 1% violation threshold of 830 half or lower on Thursday, would set off a meaningful sell signal into later spring, 685 even, then becoming the next 2 to 3 month downside objective where the broader bean market can actually place an annual low. Finally, June live cattle. In last week's show, I mentioned that a weekly settlement below 88.27 would be considered a meaningful 2 to 3 month downside sell signal. You know, of course, that did occur last Friday, and I'm now expecting 65 half by June expiration. That's a descending channel bottom on the weekly chart that drops to 64.20 by the end of May. The mid-60s target remains in full effect below 88.25. Now, upside, I only turn positive into later spring if June live cattle can settle the week above 92.55. So to summarize this, I remain bearish into later spring below 88.25, expecting 65 half over the next few months, while a weekly settlement Friday above 92.55 would reverse market momentum into later spring, 112 half then likely by June expiration. And in fact, if we close the week above 92.55, which I'm not expecting, the broader cattle market could reach into the 127 even region into later summer. by which point that would obviously involve the August and October contracts. And a little Dow talk, if I might. If we can close the week Thursday above 23,600, that should neutralize, actually, this huge sell-off we've seen in the equities, and the market can creep its way upward into the later second quarter. Until then, holding below 23,600, this market can break all the way back to 16,300 over the coming weeks, maybe the next couple of months. And that's all I got for today, Chip.
Well, the Dow is trying, man. It's 1,700 points higher right now.
It is. Yeah, it's just
22,760. Yeah.
It may do it this week. And I hope it does, actually. It would be a calming effect in the broader market, no doubt about it.
I think you're right. I think you're right there, Kerry. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you later. Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. Go to artakadvisory.com and sign up for a two-week free trial there with Kerry. National Weather Service 6-10-day outlook for April 12th through the 16th has got plenty of below-normal temperatures expected for the Corn Belt. Kind of a mixed bag on precipitation. The Dakotas, Minnesota, Northern Iowa, Wisconsin looking at below normal precipitation. The rest of the Corn Belt, including most of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, looking at above normal precipitation. Wow, dude. What a day.
What a day.
We are off and running, and we're going to keep it going tomorrow. We've got Representative Ron Kind from Wisconsin is going to be joining us, and this one you don't want to miss. Alan Morgan with the National Rural Health Association. We'll find out what kind of condition the rural health hospitals are in. And then tomorrow afternoon, Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer. Looking forward to that conversation as well. For Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Have a great one, and come back tomorrow for more AgriTalk.